Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Vacuuming them today and they're back.
What's that tweeting noise?
I don't know.
It's ladybugs talking to us.
It sounds like a bird. Mm-hmm. Bird's the word.
It's picking something up.
Yeah.
Something squeaking.
I shouldn't say that. It's going to give me anxiety. What if it's the beetle from Practical Magic?
She literally said I shouldn't say it, and then immediately said what it was.
What beetle?
Have you ever seen Practical Magic?
No. Remember?
Oh, so in Practical Magic, there's two sisters. They're witches, and they have a curse on their family. And once they find their true love, if they hear a beetle, their true love's gonna die. And one of the sisters finds her true love, and she hears the beetle, and she's like ripping the floorboards up trying to find this beetle, and she can't find it, and her husband is ran over by a truck and killed.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ, I hope mine's at least fast. Fuck.
So, we've got beetles, guys.
We immediately start this episode with me dying, by the way.
True to form, Guilty and the Ghostly.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Tori.
Yeah.
Episode 35,
you know, even though I was on the first episode, you know.
You're not a guest.
Oh, yeah. So there's been some rumors flying around.
Tori's got beef, guys.
I have beef.
With our brother. Back to the beef. We had a quick intermission.
Yeah. So the beef is not with anyone, like, that I don't know. It's with Garrett.
Garrett, she's coming for you.
Because the other night he was like, oh, yeah, I know you got invited on and Seth got invited on. I did not get invited on. I was the OG. If y'all could go back and look at the first episode, you would see that. I'm just a little absent sometimes. And we need filler. So, you know, we gotta let other people take the show sometimes. I can't be the only one.
With that being said, Garrett may come do an episode with us.
But also on that note, Audrey is always in the episode, so...
I'm always here.
You know, she's the real OG.
Yeah.
OG, OG.
OG. OG, G, G.
GGP, OG.
Whoa. Whoa.
What is going on?
Say that again.
GGP, OP. OG. Good lord. I messed that up that time. My bad. GGP, OG.
Anyways, so we're back. Tori's back. She finally decided to grace us with her presence.
Yeah.
Our thing's going crazy.
What is that?
Our EVP detector.
Has it ever done that before?
Not like that.
It likes you, Tori.
Oh, shit.
It likes you, Tori. If you like Tori, go to red. Never mind, it doesn't like you, Tori.
If you like Audrey, go to red.
if you like Josh. It likes Josh, guys. It's creeping on Josh. That's funny. Okay. So what have you been up to, girl?
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, it's like it likes me, and we're hearing this beetle that's going to kill me. And I'm great.
This might be the last step. We might really need a filler soon.
Any takers?
We really might need a filler. What's even funnier is this used to be Tori's room.
Yep.
Yeah. Right here is where I used to sleep, guys.
We used to call it her Harry Potter closet. Yep. That's funny. Well, what have you been? Where you been? What you been doing, girl?
Well, sorry, I'm a little shaken up. I have just been working like always. I did go to Oklahoma recently. Went and gambled, you know, just a little bit. I'm busy with work a lot of times, you know, or I'm busy.
Busy watching Taylor Swift's new docuseries.
Yeah, or busy, you know, like arguing with maintenance people.
We just made Josh listen. He was making dinner, and me, Tori, and Elizabeth were in the living room watching one of the new Taylor Swift.
Highlight of my life would be to be deaf at that moment.
He loved us serenading him. He's lying.
Yeah, don't let him lie to you guys.
I think your idea of what love means may be skewed.
Probably. That would explain a lot. Well, speaking of love and being askew, I've got some good stuff for you guys today.
What are you going to skewer us with?
I'm going to skewer you.
What's going on? What you got for us, girl?
Girl, so have you been a true Guilty and Ghostly fan and listened to the last couple episodes?
Yes.
Okay. So for...
I did listen to the Amenity. How do you say it? Amenity? Amenity? Amenity?
You sound Amenity. Like that fish off of the Finding Nemo.
Amenity. Amity.
Amityville.
Amityville.
See you in Amenemone.
Seen a methamphetamine.
Tylenol.
No, it's the Amityville horror.
Yeah, I listened to that one. Saw the TikTok too.
Yeah.
Reposted it.
Yep. Well, if for the listeners that haven't, we've kind of been on a Amityville horror kick. So we covered the DeFeo murders. Go back and listen to it. It's about a son that just wakes up in the middle of the night and was like, you know what? I'm gonna off my entire family. And then he blames it on demons.
The voices in his head.
Yeah. Voices. It's always the voices. And then once they put the house on the market, a year later, a whole new family moves into this house and it's supposedly haunted by these demons and ghosts and entities and a demon pig and all kinds of crazy stuff starts happening. And of course, they bring in Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Okay. I wish I had a dun 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 button.
You can just do the sound for us. I'll just isolate those and that vocal right there.
I bet I can find one.
I bet so. So when I was younger, I don't know about y'all, but when I was younger, when I would hear Ed and Lorraine Warren, they were kind of like the it people for paranormal. Like what they said goes, and they knew anything and everything about it. And they've been like that for years. But in recent years, a lot of information has come out that most of it was a hoax, and they may not be the true ghostly investigator, demonologist, wholesome couple that they are portrayed, especially in the Conjuring universe.
Well, I could have told you that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to be exaggerated, like...
For the show, for the story.
For the show, for the story, for the viewers, and also, like... Money, like back in the day, exorcisms, like, but didn't those cost money?
I don't know.
I think the church just does it.
I think it was just a service.
It's like, sorry, church. You don't have $5. I'm not getting your demon.
I thought it was like a money thing.
No. It's crazy.
No, but I imagine it probably generated money by
publicity
and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I will kind of go into how they made money off of it.
And I also thought, like, a lot of the time was because of their daughter. Did they even have a daughter? Like, in the movies?
In the movies, I don't remember if they had the daughter in the movies, but I will talk about that today, kind of about their daughter. So let's just go ahead and jump in, and then maybe it'll answer some of those questions.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with Ed Warren. He was born in 1926. His mother battled alcoholism. His family was very Catholic. His father was a police chief or like a police officer or something in that area. He grew up in a house that he believes was haunted. He's seen apparitions. He's seen things move. He would see random lights that couldn't be explained. But when he would go to his dad, I think his dad was a very black or white type of guy. There was no... He basically didn't believe it. He was just like, you need to pray to God and just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of made him stuff it down. I did kind of hear this crazy story. I found this podcast called The Warren Files. And it was talking about one account. I don't know if it's true or not. I didn't see it anywhere else. But what it said was that it talked about him growing up in his childhood home, it being haunted, and he would go to sleep at night and he would see this face of an old woman in his closet. But it wasn't your Casper the Friendly Ghost old woman. It was like she had a scowl on her face the entire time.
Dude, I would shit all over the bed if I seen something like that.
Wait, what does a scowl mean?
Like mean mugging. Just mean mugged him the entire time. And he was only, I think he lived in that house from age like 5 to 12. So he was young. And it also said that she would just kind of look at him with this disgusted look on his face. One night, Ed and his twin sister would hear the strange noise coming from the staircase in their home. And he said it almost sounded like somebody walking with a cane. So you'd hear the steps and then you'd hear like the cane hit the ground. And of course, they're kind of crying and freaking out, and Ed's mother came into their room to kind of comfort them and be like, hey, calm down, what's going on? And they're like, don't you hear that? Do you see anything? And she's like, everything's going to be fine, just go to sleep. She puts them back to bed, and she leaves the room. Once she leaves the room, Ed kind of sits there for a minute. He's like, wait a minute, my mom's not home. His mom had actually left that night to go sit with his grandmother because she was very ill and she wasn't home. And then that the next morning when he woke up, they found out that his grandmother had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of thinks it was his grandmother coming to check on him, I guess, or soothe them. I don't know. Which, if that really happened, that'd be crazy.
Well, do you remember that happening to me, kind of?
Yeah, with your grandma?
Yeah.
Your grandma Pat?
Yep. It was, actually, it was the night she died, or the night after, I can't remember. But I was laying in bed, and you guys were in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that old house we lived in, like, the hallway was right at our headboard. So I'm laying in bed, and I'm looking down the headboard, and I just see, like, an outline of this little old lady, which was exactly the same as my grandma. She was just a little old lady. And then she disappeared. It was almost like she came to say goodbye or something. It was really weird.
Yep. It's strange. Wild. So, if that really happened to him, I couldn't imagine being a young child and having to deal with that. Even as an adult, it really shook you. Because you called me, I think, that next day and was like...
Yeah, I did.
What is this? So then we have Lorraine.
What's going on?
Stop it.
Maybe it's Grandma Pat.
She's just going off a lot.
That's wild. Well, then we have Lorraine Warren. She was born in 1927 in Bridgeport, Connecticut. She was very close to her family. They were an extremely Catholic family. So I said Ed Warren's family was pretty religious. Lorraine's family was religious to the nth degree. Like, they were very, very that religious. That
thing is going nuts now.
It has never done this. It's so weird.
This is insane. I think we forgot to close the portal, guys.
So Lorraine's family, they were very religious. Around the age of 9, she began developing psychic abilities. Lorraine could see people's auras. She seen visions. She would see ghosts. As she started getting older, she kind of started practicing and using these psychic abilities more and more. But when she was much younger, she didn't realize that not everybody could see these things. She didn't realize that not everybody could see people's auras and not everybody could see the future or see ghosts. Like, she thought that was completely normal. It wasn't until she started attending a private religious school in Connecticut. It was an all-girls school and it was ran by nuns, which that would be creepy to have to go to a school. I don't know why, but that freaks me out. I'm gonna go to a school with a bunch of nuns.
I think it's just because of, like, the way movies. That things have portrayed nuns in the past. And the, like you said, the scary movies that were put out. Which one was that? I can't remember.
The Nun.
Well, I guess there was The Nun, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, while she was going to this private school, she was really starting to use her abilities and try to, I guess, experiment with them, see what she could do. And she would actually turn to the nuns and be like, hey, I'm seeing these things, I'm having these visions, I can see these auras. And the nuns were basically like, you stop that right now. That's black magic, and you don't mess with that. You don't talk about it, don't bring it up anymore. Like, that's a no-go. And so they basically just told her to stuff it down, don't use it. But she continued. She was like, I have this gift, I'm going to use it. So she did continue using her gift. She just didn't talk about it with the nuns. So how they met. So this was kind of interesting to me. And again, I did listen to the Warren Files, and he had this story of how they met, which it had some similarities, but I'm wondering if he didn't embellish it, some of it.
Well, once you do a little research, you kind of think that they embellish quite a bit.
Well, no, I think the Warren Files was made by this other guy, and I think he embellished the story a little bit.
Well, that's possible, but the stories of the Warrens are so embellished, you just kind of can't help it.
Yeah, but then I went on to their actual website where their son-in-law created almost like a timeline of how they met, where they met, what happened, and like their whole life in a timeline, have little paragraphs. It was kind of interesting to read. A lot of punctuation errors and a lot of misspellings, and it was kind of crazy. So that was kind of odd, which I can't say anything because I do it all the time, but still.
I'm horrible with punctuation, but spelling,
yeah,
I'm good at.
Well, this is what I found on their website, which I think I have it down here. I'll link it in the notes. That way, if anybody wants to go check it out, it is kind of interesting. So in 1944, 16-year-old Lorraine decided to go to the movies with two of her friends. They walked down to the Colonial Theater in Bridgeport, Connecticut. One of the girls told Lorraine that there was an usher that worked there, and his name was Ed. And he was interested in Lorraine. But Lorraine really wasn't interested in meeting him. She wasn't really interested in boys. She was kind of focusing on school and herself. And she was like, I'm not really interested, but let's go to the movies and hang out. So they went to the movies. She ended up meeting this usher. And she immediately was attracted to him. She said he was handsome, dressed nicely. He smelled good. She would even say that he smelled of Noxzema, which I didn't know what that was. Do you know what it is?
No, but it sounds like it made me nauseous.
Well, I guess it's some kind of like moisturizing cream almost that he would put on. So I guess Ed actually worked as a lifeguard during the day. And after his shift as a lifeguard, he put this cream on and that's what he smelled like. Gotcha. I don't know if it smells good. I don't know if it smells bad. But she said that's what he smelled like.
He smelled good and had that soft skin.
The soft skin. The soft baby skin.
Well, after the movie was over, Ed asked if he could walk the girls home. And so they ended up stopping by a local diner where Ed would buy the girls a drink, like a Coke or whatever. I even seen where they kind of joked around where all the other girls got just like a regular Coke, but Lorraine got a milkshake or something like that, or a float, and it was more expensive than the other girls. And Ed always kind of joked around that she's always had like the expensive taste, or she was always kind of, I guess, exactly.
She's a little extra.
Yeah, a little extra. Lorraine's house was the furthest one away from this diner, so they all walked together to and kind of dropped him off house by house. But Lorraine really didn't want Ed to walk her all the way home because she was like, it looked bad, inappropriate. Again, we're in the 1940s, so you know how that goes. She's like, I don't want you to walk me home. We're at his house, so just had him walk in. So they say their goodbyes. He crosses the street and goes to go in his house. And when he ran across the street, Lorraine said, I didn't see the slender young man of 16. I physically saw Ed. I don't know what I was trying to put there. I guess
you psychically saw him.
Yeah, it does say, I psychically saw Ed as a grown man, a man that I would marry. In fact, when I returned home that evening, I even wrote in my diary, today I met the man I'm going to marry. So that's the first day that she met him, which is kind of sweet. I guess after that, they started dating. They were instantly basically together. Well, Ed Warren would enlist in the U.S. Navy on September 7th, 1943. It was Ed's 17th birthday, and he initially attempted to enlist in the Marine Corps and had actually lied about his age, but when they found out that he lied, they denied him and wouldn't let him sign up. So then in February of 1943, on the North Atlantic Ocean, it was cold and windy, so once he did turn of age, he joined the Navy. So on February 5th, 1943, on the North Atlantic Ocean, it was cold. It was a cold, windy day, and Ed was serving on a ship called the Spring Hill. Most of the soldiers were below deck, other than the few that were on watch. Suddenly, an oil tanker collided with the Spring Hill. Flames and heavy smoke began to billow from the ships, and the men were all ordered to abandon ship. So they're like, jump overboard. It's fixing a blow. So they all began jumping into the icy, rough waters. Ed soon seen a crew member start going down, so he swam over to him, trying to help him, because Ed was a strong swimmer from being a lifeguard when he was younger, so he was trying to help his crewmate stay afloat. As they looked around, they were looking for safety. They soon realized that they were basically surrounded by flames and had nowhere to go. They were stuck in the middle of it.
And sharks.
Not only were they suddenly surrounded by flames, but sharks began attacking people.
I knew it. There's always sharks.
Always sharks. Sharknado. Ed began to pray, and he said that he kind of like held his breath and went underwater for a few minutes, try to get relief from the flames, and he was praying underwater. Ed opened his eyes, and he seen like these flames ahead of him, and it's almost like they parted. And a lifeboat appeared between these flames with two sailors on it. So they rush over. They pull the guy that Ed was trying to help out of the water, put him on the boat. And just when Ed thought they were going to pull him onto the boat, one of the men said, just leave him. We've got to get out of here. The tank's about to blow. And so Ed thought, great, I'm going to die. So close to being saved, I'm gonna die. But the other sailor was like, we're right here, just grab him. And so he grabbed him and pulled him up. He's like, I'm not leaving my crewmate here, like, grab him. So they grabbed him, pulled Ed on the boat. They were able to be saved. That day resulted in 19 fatalities and 122 injured soldiers. I didn't know about that. I thought that was kind of interesting.
That is pretty cool. I mean, not cool that it happened.
But. Wow, Josh. Wow.
Yeah, I messed that up, guys. I'm sorry.
super cool that a bunch of your buddies died and got attacked by sharks.
Always sharks.
I know. Well, for his bravery, Ed was granted survivor's leave for 30 days, and Ed and Lorraine would get married while he was on this leave. Ed then returned to finish serving in the Navy during World War II, and in 1951, Ed and Lorraine would welcome their one and only child named Judy. So they did have one child.
A daughter.
Well, after serving in the Navy, Ed enrolled in Perry Art School. He did that for about 2 years, and then he ended up withdrawing from it. When he did that, him and Lorraine would basically travel through Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and they would try to sell Ed's paintings, but he really gravitated towards, like, ghostly paintings. They really, I guess, inspired him. Mm-hmm. And while they're doing all this, I did see another source where even though they had their daughter, the daughter was never with them. The daughter basically lived with the grandparents while Ed and Lorraine traveled doing these little pop-up shops with his art. Well, eventually it turned into that they would kind of try to find houses that were haunted, and then Ed would go and paint or sketch these supposed haunted houses, and then they would knock on the door and be like, I made this for you. Here's your haunted house.
What the heck?
And then Lorraine would be like, if I can come in and talk to the ghost, because at this point he's not a demonologist. They only dealt with ghosts up to this point.
That's a really weird flex.
Weird flex.
I'm a demonologist, by the way.
I'll explain that. I'll explain it in a minute.
Here's a picture of your house. You know it's haunted, right?
Yeah. And then Lorraine would go in and be like, I'm a psychic. I have psychic abilities. Let's get rid of these ghosts for you. And then, of course...
I sage.
Let's sage it out, girl.
Holy water.
But then they would pay them to do... They wouldn't, like, charge them, but they, of course, would get paid... For
like,
doing this.
They would, like, give them tips. Like,
yes.
Thank you so much for telling us our house is haunted things.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, then in 1952, it was a pretty big year for Ed and Lorraine Warren. That is the year that the infamous... Pushed the wrong damn button.
You and those damn buttons.
That was the year the infamous who... Let me do this again.
Reset.
That is the year that they founded the New England Society for Psychic Research. And they would also open up their very own occult museum. So I thought the museum wasn't opened until, like, much later in life. But they opened it pretty early.
Which is, like,
well, yeah, they all gotta the make things that they money. Found.
Basically, they would, when they were going to these houses and stuff, and they'd be like, oh, this mirror's haunted. Let me take it off your hands.
Are you serious?
And let me go put it in my museum in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to charge people to come look at this haunted mirror.
How would they prove that it's haunted?
How do you prove it? You say, it's haunted. See, this is haunted.
It is not haunted.
I don't know, that thing's doing some weird stuff.
Disagrees with you.
Maybe the batteries are going out.
You know, I thought about that a second ago, too. It could just be the batteries, but... I mean, it's only lighting up one LED light every now and then, so that battery probably lasts quite a while.
So they were making money off of their paintings, going to these houses... making appearances, and then in 1968, Ed and Lorraine would have their first big break. A student nurse is given a Raggedy Ann doll as a gift, and she brings it home where she lives with a roommate, and almost immediately, of course, the roommates notice strange occurrences with the doll, and they were introduced to a medium who told them that the doll was inhabited by a spirit of a young girl named Annabelle.
I already don't like dolls. And I feel like it's for that exact reason.
Annabelle?
Yes. I had a cousin who had all kinds of dolls in her room, and that room just made me so uncomfortable. <That's funny. laughs> And I'm not talking about like 15 or 20. There were hundreds in that room.
Why? That's excessive. Oh,
and it was so... As a young boy, it scared the ever-living hell out of me.
All those beady eyes just staring at you.
That would scare empty me eyes. And then soulless you just, eyes.
You just stare at them like, is it moving? And then your eyes start like playing tricks on you, and you're like, did that just yeah. move?
And then I had another cousin that had a Friday the 13th poster on his closet door. And that was for some reason I always stayed in there. And I hated that room because that poster, the way that it was designed, his eyes would follow you. It was so scary.
So the two roommates tried to accept the doll's spirit and it to please it. And it basically reciprocated with maliciousness, violence. You know the story. And this is when Ed and Lorraine Warren were called, and they pronounced this possessed doll as being demonically possessed. And this is about also about the time that Ed added demonologist to his name.
But yep. He never went to school for it.
I didn't see where he did or didn't.
Do you have to, like, actually go to school?
I don't know. How do you become a demonologist?
You just self-proclaim that you're a demonologist.
So, wow. Would we be demonologists because we cover paranormal stuff?
If you say it, then I guess so.
I mean, in that sense, probably, but I feel like I'd have to know a little more about demons than...
And he was obviously knowledgeable in it because, I mean, he knew all this stuff about it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's hard to, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think... After researching it myself, my feeling on the subject is that originally it started out as something that they felt was real, and quickly they found out that they could make money off of it, and it just blew up from there.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Well, they removed the doll from the house, and they added it to... their collection in their museum.
Museum in a basement.
Could you imagine living on top of all that shit?
Can you imagine being their child and living in all of that?
Oh, dude.
Well, then in 1971, their next big case would come along. The Perrin family, who lived in Harrisville, Rhode Island. The home was said to be haunted by a witch from the 19th century by the name of Bathsheba Sherman.
Sketchy name.
Based on the Warren's research, the witch cursed this piece of land so that the inhabitants would eventually suffer a painful, untimely death. This case also inspired the 2013 film, The Conjuring, which Lorraine Warren was a consultant on. In 1974, the Lutz family story would take place, which we just covered that story last week with Remember That.
Yep.
And the Warrens claim to have investigated over 10,000 paranormal events and often cooperated with professionals such as doctors, nurses, researchers, police. They claim to have worked with everybody. They reportedly never charged clients for their paranormal work. They did make a profit through writing books, making public appearances, selling the rights to their stories for film, television shows, books. So that's how they were making money. They would get these stories and then write a book about it or go make appearances and then charge for those. So they wouldn't charge the family.
Hurricane Katrina.
Wouldn't be GGP. If she wouldn't do that every now and then.
I have no spatial awareness, okay?
Nope.
It's okay. The cord down here keeps hitting the table.
I know. I keep hearing it. Oh, that was creepy sounding.
Yeah, it was weird sounding. Okay. So that's how they would make their money. They wouldn't charge the actual families, which I will kind of talk about.
I'm sorry, guys. I don't know why it keeps doing that.
I don't know what to do with my hands. So I will talk about that in a little bit and the repercussions of them doing this with the families. No, they wouldn't charge them money, but it caused those families a lot of stress and issues. Maybe not financially, but other issues.
Yeah, in their lives. But even that, when you get those issues that they have after that, it's going to cause financial issues.
100%.
And then not to mention the publicity that you would get from that in a negative light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people would be showing up at your house.
Mm-hmm. The Amityville Horror House, they had to change their address. They had to take the windows out. And they still have people coming and looking at their house.
Yep.
They actually ended up suing the Warrens. And I think the guy that wrote the book on it saying, you're causing all of this for us. All these looky-loos and all this unwanted publicity. Stop.
There's no privacy nowadays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so sad.
Well, the Warrens Museum would temporarily close in 2018 due to zoning issues. And then after Lorraine Warren's death in 2019, it basically shut down. Which I should have kind of talked about it a little bit more, but you know, there's that whole fiasco with like Matt Rife buying the museum, but he didn't buy the museum. I think he bought items in the museum, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's what I read too, but I can't remember. But I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Well, the Warrens would become basically staples in the paranormal community. But as I said, as years went on, more and more claims came out. This thing needs to calm down.
Yeah, for real. Every time you talk about the Amityville house, it goes off.
Calm down. Calm down. That's enough. However, as years went...
Look, if you're a priest, we may need a cleansing.
Not the one from Amityville.
Yeah, he was kind of a chicken.
Yeah.
On a ranking of 1 to 5, he was definitely a...
-2.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
Wait, what did he do? Did he just run out of the
house? Oh, yeah, he ran away.
He went to bless the house and heard a voice that told him to get out. And he's like, okay. And so he left. Didn't tell the family that this happened. Didn't tell them that he heard anything. He was just like, what the heck?
Yep. Just left him there?
But I've got more information on that, too.
Okay.
The Warrens would become staples in the paranormal community. However, as years went on, more and more claims came out that they were a hoax and they knew how to make a narrative fit their stories. Almost every notable case the Warrens were involved in would soon be debunked. Ray Garten, who worked with the Warrens on a book about the... I looked how to say it a couple of days ago, but it's already left my mind. Snedeker, I believe is how you say it. The Snedeker family that would inspire the haunting in Connecticut. They claimed in an interview with Horrorbound magazine that the Warrens knew that the case was fake. They allegedly instructed Garten to invent details that he believed might help sell the book. Garten would go on to say that as he gathered information for the book, a lot of the accounts of the family did not line up. They allegedly instructed Garten to invent details he believed might help sell the story. Garten would go on to say that as he gathered information from the book, a lot of the accounts of the family didn't line up. They wouldn't make sense. They didn't match. Like, it was made up, completely made up. He even went to Ed about it, and Ed would tell Garten, oh, they're crazy. Everybody that comes to us is just crazy. Otherwise, why would they have come to us? You've got some of the story. Just use what works and make the rest up. Like, he was like, you're a writer. Do your job.
Yeah.
Which I seen in another source that said before they hired this guy, they tried hiring somebody else. And he straight up told them, if I think this is a hoax or I think this is fake, I'll say it. I'll say it's fake. And they fired him and wouldn't use him. And they hired somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, they would be sued by a family member of the family that was involved in the Devil in Connecticut. They claimed Ed and Lorraine Warren told complete lies about the family, made up the entire story about demons in an attempt to get rich and famous at the family's expense. In 2014, maybe the most shocking revelation came to light. Now, this is crazy. A woman named Judith Penny claimed that she was just 15 years old when Ed was 30 and they began a romantic relationship. She was only 2 years older than his daughter.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
And here's another thing. Her name is, this is just another thing that's weird. Her name is Judith. Their daughter's name is Judy.
Yep. I remember you telling me about this now.
She said that she experienced physical and emotional abuse and even forced abortions. Or abortion, I know of one, at least. Allegedly, Judith lived with the family for 40 years, and Lorraine was fully aware of everything that was happening. Judith was even arrested, and there are documents. She was arrested in 1963 for living in the family's home, because at the time, it was illegal for a single woman to reside in the same household as a married man.
What a strange law.
1940s were wild. Well, I guess it wasn't the 1940s. By this time, it'd be the 50s?
I'm not mathing right now, okay. Bro.
No mathing for us. Still a crazy time. Crazy time. Ed would refer to Judith as the love of his life in front of Lorraine. Judith would go on to say that in 1978, she became pregnant by Ed. Lorraine allegedly threatened her and gave her two choices: lie and claim that she had been raped, or get an abortion. They wanted Judith to go around and say that someone broke into her apartment and attacked her. And she's like, I can't do that. Like, I can't go through with this story. Because what if they find somebody, or what if somebody gets arrested for it and it's not...
like, falsely accused.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, I can't do that.
Yep.
She didn't know what else to do, so she ended up going through and having an abortion. After the abortion, they picked her up from the hospital, and then they went out and gave a lecture, and then left Judith all alone at home after having the abortion. Picked her up from the hospital, dropped her off at home, Ed and Lorraine went to their little lecture. Judith also told stories of Ed being physically and emotionally abusive to Lorraine. The physical abuse would be so bad that Lorraine would end up losing consciousness several times during the fights.
Oh my gosh.
The couple adamantly denied these claims. However, Lorraine's contract in The Conjuring has made people raise their eyebrows a little bit. It stated they could not portray Ed and Lorraine in any light as far as having an affair, having sex with a minor, having any involvement with child pornography, no sex workers, or being guilty of sexual assault. So they didn't want any of that in the movies. Which, okay, I understand that, but why are you being so specific about these details?
Yeah, that is kind of oddly specific.
Why would you say
specific?
You didn't want it in the movie? Like,
it's just weird.
Is there a chance that it could be in the movie? Like, why would you even say that at the beginning?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just weird. Judy, the Warren's daughter, maintained that Ed and Lorraine allowed Judith Penny to move into their home when Penny was 18 and as an act of charity because she had nowhere else to go. So during all of this, they basically said that Judith Penny was his assistant and worked for them, and that's why she was living with them. But Penny herself came forward and said, no, these allegations are true. Like, this is what happened to me. They described Penny as a long-term family friend who frequently ran the Warren home when Ed and Lorraine were out on the road. But again, she's only 2 years older than their daughter. It's just weird.
That's a really weird situation.
They said that Penny had a long-term boyfriend while living with the Warrens, to whom she would later marry, which she did later get married to a boy. And that's actually when she separated herself from the Warrens. Judith would end the relationship with Ed in 2003. They did remain friendly up until Ed's death. Ed would die on August 23rd, 2006 at his home in Monroe, Connecticut at the age of 79. He reportedly passed away due to complications from a stroke years after having a heart attack in 2001. Lorraine died on April 18th, 2019, also in their home, at the age of 92. The old buzzard made it a while. Yeah, 92 is a ripe old age.
All those demons.
Fountain of youth.
Yep.
The exact cause of her death has not been revealed. However, she did reportedly die peacefully in her sleep. So as far as the hoaxes go, I seen one where a lot of, or let me go back up. Let me talk about the proof. So, you know, as they were doing all these lectures, they'd be like, we have this video proof. We have this photo proof. And they're like, okay, release it. Okay, we will. And they would never release any kind of proof. There was one picture that they took in a cemetery where it's like kind of blurry and you kind of see something off in the distance. But word on the street is it was just that Judith Penny girl and had a sheet over her running across the cemetery. And they took a picture. And
that was the assistant's room.
Put the sheet on and go, woo! Yeah.
When we're walking through this house, just knock on the walls.
Yeah, yeah.
Scare the people that are in there so we can make money.
But that's how a lot of those stories would be. They would get, these people would come to them and be like, help me. And they'd be like, oh, there's definitely demons. There are demons in here. And they would feed into this mass hysteria and, of course, give these lectures and take them on these road trips to do all these interviews. And they're just pulling in money. And about the time that gravy train would end, they'd find their next case a couple of years later, and the whole process would just start over and over and over again. No proof, no real evidence, nothing.
Yep.
Just a word.
Just hearsay.
Just demons. Demonologist.
Just a feeling, I guess.
I have some feelings. Stop it. Our ghost is gone now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the kind of backstory of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yep.
I will say that was kind of cool to find out about his time in the Navy. I had never heard that before.
Yeah, and when you told me that, I'd been doing a little research for a couple of days, and I hadn't come across that at all.
It was on their page.
Well, I didn't look at any of their stuff because I didn't want any biased information.
Which, and that's a whole nother thing that's kind of weird, too, is their son-in-law, like, their daughter kind of stays out of the spotlight. It's the son-in-law that keeps still pushing everything. Judith is quiet and keeps to herself. She doesn't really do interviews. But her husband is the one that's, like, pushing all this stuff out and keeping up with the lore of them, I guess.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's the Ed and Lorraine Warren story.
Yep. Episode 35.
Episode 35. It's a quick one. It's a short one.
I don't know. We talked a lot.
We did talk a lot. It happens. Other than somebody falling asleep over there again.
Yeah. She should have drank some Dubby.
She should have drank some Dubby. Which she did try the Dubby. What'd you think about the Dubby?
It's pretty good. It was a little sour, but
like sweet and sour.
Yeah.
The one thing about those energy drink powders like that is sometimes when you mix it, they kind of have like a real thick, chalky texture to them. That one doesn't.
Mm-mm, not at all.
Yeah.
Really smooth. So, if you need some energy, I do have some new flavors coming. Go to Dubby. I think it's dubby.gg.com. Use our promo code GGP. Get your 10% off. Get some Dubby. Get it sent to you. Yep. We're going to have some new flavors to try soon. There you have it.
Yep. So.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. I
guess the story of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
All right. Well.
Oh, my God. She's awake.
Yep. See you later.
So just mentioning Dubby. Look what happens.
Yeah. We just had to mention it. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate it. I think I'm going to have another good story for you guys next week. I think I'm going to take a break from the Warrens for a while. And we're going to... I think I have a good true crime one coming up.
Yep.
I'm going to rip your heart out.
It's going to be pretty rough, guys.
It's going to be a rough one. All right. Well, till next week, I hope you all enjoy it. Stay warm. We've got a cold blast coming through. It's going to be freezing.
Ish.
It's cold, y'all. And we'll see y'all next week. Stay spooky.
See y'all later.